The following program is presented by the Far East Broadcasting Company because stories of people living out the gospel with their lives inspire all of us. FEBC, taking Christ to the world through radio and new media. Learn more at febc.org.
I will live in the past, the present, and the future, Scrooge repeated as he scrambled out of bed. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Heaven and the Christmas time be praised for this.
Merry Christmas and welcome to a special edition of First Person. I'm Wayne Shepherd. The voice you heard a moment ago belongs to my friend Mike Kellogg, a longtime radio host and storyteller who is now retired but agreed to come back today to share a portion of the classic tale, Dickens' A Christmas Carol. Mike has performed this reading many times but specifically visited the studio for today's presentation, so please stay with us. Since this is a holiday, you may be listening to us for the first time. If that is the case, I invite you to explore our website for previous programs, all interviews with people who have given their lives to Christ and served the Lord in some unique calling. You can access these interviews at firstpersoninterview.com or through our free smartphone app. Look for First Person Interview in your app store. And also join us on Facebook at facebook.com/firstpersoninterview. My friendship with Mike Kellogg goes all the way back to the 1970s when we were both on the staff of WMBI in Chicago, Moody Radio. Mike was very involved in radio drama production and eventually hosted a very successful nationally syndicated overnight program called Music Through the Night. As I welcomed Mike to the studio for what we're going to hear now, I mentioned remembering our early days and my first assignment as the producer of a live music program which he hosted.
Oh, neither one of us knew the music. I think it was your first week.
I was the rookie running the control board, and you were the talent, and it was a memorable experience. Let me just put it that way. But Merry Christmas to you, Mike, and to the Kellogg family.
We love Christmas. We have 6 children now and 19 grandchildren, and so it's been a joy. This is probably the best passage in all my life. I love teaching better than broadcasting, but I love stories. This morning as I read this over, I was again overjoyed at the thrill of being able to do what I like best, which was reading stories.
Well, when I saw the calendar that First Person would be on either Christmas Day or the day after Christmas on many radio stations, I knew that we just had to move to storytelling mode, and who better than Michael Kellogg to do that with us. So tell me what you've chosen to share with us today.
Today we'd like to read a portion of A Christmas Carol. And I think the vast majority of people who experience Christmas don't know what it's about. And I think it's really sad. Of course, it's about the birth of Jesus Christ, started in a manger. But there are ramifications for all of us, things that we need to learn. The Christmas story is about love. God's loving us and sharing his son with us. You know, Scrooge was a terrible, terrible character, but he had a transformation because here he is and his friends are dying around him and he's just been an old skinflint and keeping his money as close to his vest as he could. And what's really neat, though, is these three spirits come, the spirit of, you know, Christmas past and Christmas present and Christmas to come, and he learns so much. He learns so much. It's just a wonderful story.
Well, we don't have time for the whole book, but you've chosen the end of it to read for us today. So, Mike Kellogg, A Christmas Carol here on First Person. Mike?
Yes, and the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in. I will live in the past, the present, and the future, Scrooge repeated as he scrambled out of bed. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and the Christmas time be praised for this. I say it on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees. He was so fluttered and so glowing with his good intentions that his broken voice would scarcely answer to its call. He had been sobbing violently in his conflict with the spirit, and its face was wet with tears. "Oh, they're not torn down," cried Scrooge, folding one of his bed curtains in his arms. "They're not torn down. Rings and all, they're here. I am here. The shadows of the things that would have been may be dispelled. They will be. I know they will." His hands were busy with his garments all this time, turning them inside out, putting them on upside down, tearing them, slaying them, making them parties to every kind of extravagance. "I don't know what to do," cried Scrooge, laughing and crying in the same breath, and making a perfect lacoon of himself with his stockings. "I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all the world. Hello there! Woo-hoo-hoo! Hello!" He had frisked into the sitting room and was now standing there perfectly winded. "There's the saucepan that the gruel was in," cried Scrooge, starting off again and going round the fireplace. "There's the door by which the ghost of Jacob Marley entered. There's the corner where the ghost of Christmas Present sat. There's the window where I saw the wandering spirits. It's all right. It's all true. It all happened." Really, for a man who had been out of practice for so many years, it was a splendid laugh, a most illustrious laugh, the father of a long, long line of brilliant laughs. "I don't know what day of the month it is," said Scrooge. "I don't know how long I've been among the spirits. I don't know anything. I'm quite a baby. Never mind. I don't care. I'd rather be a baby. Hello! Ooh, hello there!" He was checked in his transports by the churches ringing out the lustiest peals he had ever heard. Clash, clash, hammer, ding-dong bell, bell-dong-ding, hammer, clang, clash, oh, glorious, glorious. Running to the window, he opened it and put out his head. No fog, no mist. Clear, bright, jovial, stirring, cold, cold piping for the blood to dance to, golden sunlight, heavenly sky, sweet, fresh air, merry bells. Oh, glorious, glorious! "What's today?" cried Scrooge, calling downward to a boy in Sunday clothes who perhaps had loitered in to look about him. "Ah!" returned the boy with all his might of wonder. "What's today, my fine fellow?" said Scrooge. "Today," replied the boy. "Why, it's Christmas Day." "It's Christmas Day," said Scrooge to himself. "I haven't missed it. Oh, the spirits have done it all in one night. They can do anything they like. Of course they can. Of course they can. Hello, my fine fellow." "Hello," returned the boy. "Do you know the poulterers in the next street, but one at the corner?" Scrooge inquired. "I should hope I did," replied the lad. "An intelligent boy," said Scrooge, "a remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold that prize turkey that was hanging up there? Not the little prize turkey, the big one." "What? The one big as me?" returned the boy. "Oh, what a delightful boy," said Scrooge. "It's a pleasure to talk to him." "Yes, my buck." "It's hanging there now," replied the boy. "Is it? You go and buy it." "Walk, exclaimed the boy. "No, no," said Scrooge. "I'm in earnest. Go and buy it. Tell them to bring it here that I may give them the directions where to take it. Come back with the man and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown." The boy was off like a shot. He must have had a steady hand at a trigger who could have shot off half as fast. "I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's," whispered Scrooge, rubbing his hands and spreading with a laugh. "He shan't know who sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim. Joe Miller never made such a joke as sending it to Bob's will be. The hand in which he wrote the address was not a steady one, but write it he did somehow, and went downstairs to open the street door, ready for the coming of the poulterer's man. And as he stood there, waiting his arrival, the knocker caught his eye. "I shall love it as long as I live," cried Scrooge, patting it with his hands. "I scarcely ever looked at it before. What an honest expression it has in its face. It's a wonderful knocker. Here's the turkey. Hello. Woo-hoo! How are you? Merry Christmas." It was a turkey. He never could have stood upon his legs, that bird. He would have snapped him short off in a minute, like sticks of sealing wax. "Why, it's impossible to carry that to Camden Town," said Scrooge. "You must have a cab." The chuckle with which he said this, and the chuckle with which he paid for the turkey, and the chuckle with which he paid for the cab, and the chuckle with which he recompensed the boy, was only to be exceeded by the chuckle with which he sat down breathless in his chair again and chuckled till he cried. Shaving was not an easy task, for his hand continued to shake very much, and shaving requires attention, even when you don't dance while you're at it. But if he had cut the end of his nose off, he would have put a piece of sticking plaster over it and been quite satisfied, actually. He dressed himself all in his best and at last got out into the streets. The people were by this time pouring forth as he had seen them with the ghost of Christmas present, and walking with his hands behind him, Scrooge regarded everyone with a delighted smile. He looked so irresistibly pleasant, in a word, that three or four good-humored fellows said, "Good morning, sir. A Merry Christmas to you." And Scrooge said often afterwards that of all the blithe sounds he had ever heard, those were the blithest in his ears. He had not gone far when, coming on toward him, he beheld the portly gentleman who had walked into his counting-house the day before and said, "Scrooge and Marley's, I believe." It sent a pang across his heart to think how this old gentleman would look upon him when they met. But he knew what path lay straight before him, and he took it. "My dear sir," said Scrooge, quickening his pace and taking the old gentleman by both his hands, "how do you do? I hope you succeeded yesterday. It was very kind of you. A Merry Christmas to you, sir." "Mr. Scrooge?" "Yes," says Scrooge. "That's my name, and I fear it may not be pleasant to you. Allow me to ask your pardon, and will you have the goodness?" Here Scrooge whispered in his ear. "Lord bless me," cried the gentleman, as if his breath were taken away. "My dear Mr. Scrooge, are you serious?" "If you please," said Scrooge, "not a farthing less. A great many back payments are included in it, I assure you. Will you do me that favor?" "Oh, my dear sir," said the other, shaking hands with him, "I don't know what to say to such munific—" "Don't say anything, please," retorted Scrooge. "Come and see me. Will you come and see me?" "Oh, I will," cried the old gentleman, and it was clear he meant to do it. "Thank ye," said Scrooge. "I'm much obliged to ye. I thank ye 50 times. Bless you." He went to church and walked about the streets, watched the people hurrying to and fro, and patted the children on the head, and questioned the beggars, and looked down into the kitchens of houses and up to the windows, and found that everything could yield him pleasure. He had never dreamed that anything could give him so much happiness. And in the afternoon he turned his steps toward his nephew's house. He said good morning to the girl. "Oh, nice girl, very, yes, sir. Where is he, my love?" said Scrooge. "Oh, he's in the dining room, sir, along with mistress. I'll show you upstairs, if you please." "Thank ye, he knows me," said Scrooge, with his hand already on the dining room lock. "I'll go in here, my dear." And there was Fred. "Fred!" Dear heart alive, how his niece by marriage started. Scrooge had forgotten for the moment about her sitting in the corner with a footstool, or he wouldn't have done it on any account. "I bless my soul," cried Fred. "Who's that?" "It is I, your Uncle Scrooge. I've come to dinner. Will you let me in, Fred?" let him in. In a mercy, he didn't shake his arm off. He was at home in 5 minutes. Nothing could be heartier. His niece looked just the same. So did Topper when he came. So did the plump sister when she came. So did everyone when they came. Wonderful party, wonderful games, wonderful unanimity, wonderful happiness. But he was early at the office the next morning. Oh, he was early there. If he could only be there first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late. That was the thing he had set his heart upon. And he did it. Yes, he did. The clock struck 9. No Bob. 9:15. No Bob. He was full 18 minutes and a half behind his time. And Scrooge sat with his door wide open that he might see him come into the tank. His hat was off before he opened the door. His comforter, too. He was on his stool in a jiffy, driving away with his pen, as if he were trying to overtake 9 o'clock. "Hello," growled Scrooge in his accustomed voice, as near as he could feign it. "What do you mean by coming here at this time of the day?"
"Oh, I'm very sorry, sir," said Bob. "I am behind my time."
"You are," repeated Scrooge. "Yes, I think you are. Step this way, sir, if you please."
"It's only once a year, sir," pleaded Bob, peering from the tank. "It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir."
"Now I'll tell you what, my friend," said Scrooge. "I am not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. Therefore," he continued, leaping from his stool and giving Bob such a dig in the waistcoat that he staggered back into the tank again, and "therefore, I'm about to raise your salary." Bob trembled, got a little nearer to the ruler. He had a momentary idea of knocking Scrooge down with it, holding him and calling to the people in the court for help and a straight waistcoat. "A Merry Christmas, Bob," said Scrooge, with an earnestness that could not be mistaken, as he clapped him on his back. "A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family, and we will discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop, Bob. Make up the fires. Buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit." Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all, and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh and little heeded them, for he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good, at which some people did not have their fill of laughter in the outset, and knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins as have the malady in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge. And may that be truly said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
Truly a classic. A Christmas Carol, as read by a classic voice. Mike Kellogg here on First Person on Christmas. Michael, thank you for reading that. All that time ago that story was written and how it resonates with our heart here this Christmas, right?
Several years ago, we did a recording of this with
two of my best friends, John Gager and Joe Carlson. And I tell you, we delighted in the story. I mean, we delighted in the story. Probably one of the best things that we ever did together. One of the best things I ever did. And the story has always been a special of mine as a little boy. I grew up in a home that for the most part, was not a godly home. I had parents that I loved dearly, and all of us love our parents. But this story, to me, was about the real meaning of Christmas, and it is to so many of those who've listened now.
Well, you mentioned Joe. Joe is working behind the scenes right now on what our listeners are hearing from us. So this gives me a good opportunity, along with you, to say thank you to Joe Carlson, my good friend, who's been with me for many, many years, working as colleagues at Moody Bible Institute, Moody Radio, and now together on First Person and many other projects. So I know that you would join me in wishing Joe a very Merry Christmas right now.
Well, very much. I'm going to tell you, Joe's one of these special people in our life who right now is working in ministry directly with people.
Mike Kellogg, thank you for making this such a special Christmas here on First Person, Mike. God bless you and your family, too. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. God bless you.
Well, it has been a real treat for me to present Mike's reading of a portion of A Christmas Carol for your enjoyment on this holiday edition of First Person. What you've heard will be placed, along with all of our programs, in the audio archive you'll find at firstpersoninterview.com. Before we leave, may I share the Christmas story with you from Luke chapter 2. At that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. This was the first census taken when Quirinius was governor of Syria. All returned to their own ancestral towns to register for this census. And because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee. He took with him Mary, to whom he was engaged, who was now expecting a child. And while they were there, the time came for her baby to be born. She gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger, because there was no lodging available for them. That night, there were shepherds staying in the fields nearby, guarding their flocks of sheep. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared among them, and the radiance of the Lord's glory surrounded them. They were terrified, but the angel reassured them. "Don't be afraid," he said. "I bring you good news that will bring great joy to all people. The Savior, yes, the Messiah, the Lord, has been born today in Bethlehem, the city of David. And you will recognize him by this sign. You will find a baby wrapped snugly in strips of cloth, lying in a manger." Suddenly, the angel was joined by a vast host of others, the armies of heaven, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in highest heaven, and peace on earth to those with whom God is pleased." When the angels had returned to heaven, the shepherds said to each other, "Let's go to Bethlehem. Let's see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about." They hurried to the village and found Mary and Joseph, and there was the baby, lying in the manger. After seeing him, the shepherds told everyone what had happened and what the angel had said to them about this child. All who heard the shepherd's story were astonished, but Mary kept all these things in her heart and thought about them often. As we leave you today, take time to praise and glorify God for the gift of His Son, Jesus Christ. Thanks for listening to First Person.